This is the Turf Zone Podcast, your central information and news hub, bringing together professionals from turf associations across multiple states to share things to help you and your business. Brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Mississippi Turfgrass Association. Now, let's get in the zone.
Welcome to the Turf Zone. In this episode of Mississippi Turfgrass, we're speaking with Dr. Maria Tommaso-Peterson, research professor in plant pathology at Mississippi State University. Maria, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us today.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning.
Awesome. So let's start in your early years and get a little background about your career path and your education. So where did you start on your path to becoming a plant pathologist?
Well, I started in ornamental horticulture, and I got my BS degree in that. In that curriculum, I was very interested in plant propagation, and this was back in the early 80s, so a long time ago. And I was very interested in tissue culture, which was kind of state of the art back in that time, and I was interested in pursuing a master's degree in tissue culture. And at Mississippi State, the only person that was working in tissue culture was Dr. Jeff Kranz in turf. And I'd had his class, Turfgrass Management, my last year. And I really enjoyed that. And the students I met in there, and I met my lifetime friend, Melody Frazier, who's at Pure Seed Testing now. And so I started with his program doing tissue culture in turfgrass. And my project was to select disease resistance for creeping bentgrass germplasm. And I kind of was like, oh, good grief, fungi. I hated plant pathology, the class. And I thought, oh, what am I going to do? But I settled in and I was working with Rhizoctonia solani, which I learned to love working with that organism. And so after my master's, I became a research associate under Dr. Kranz. And I continued my master's work, which was the in vitro cell selection for brown patch resistant germplasm and creeping bentgrass. And I attended an international turf research conference. It was in the United States that year down in Palm Beach. And I knew I wanted to move on in my education. So while I was down there, I attended a lot of talks and I listened to a talk by Dr. Monica Elliott. She was describing Bermuda grass decline for the first time to an audience. And I was just taken back and just, I was like, this is what I want to do. And so I started on that career path while working as a research assistant on my PhD. So it took me a long time to get my PhD. But I think it's kind of interesting that I'm ending my career working with ectotrophic root infecting fungi that cause Bermuda grass decline or take all root rot. And it's just kind of interesting the paths that life lends to you and the doors that open. And it's been a while, but it seems like it was just yesterday now. And it's just been great. So that's how I got here today.
Excellent. So, you know, I always like to hear who shepherded folks along their path in their career. And you mentioned Dr. Kranz. Who else kind of walked that path with you and helped you determine your route?
Well, once I determined I wanted to go into plant pathology, I had a turfgrass management student working for me at the time, Gary McCullough, who was kind of instrumental in some of the paths I took, a very dear lifelong friend. And he told me, you need to teach turfgrass diseases to our students. And I was like, oh, I could probably do that. So then after 7 years of working with Dr. Kranz, I had an opportunity to become the research assistant for Dr. Larry Trevathan, who is in plant pathology. And he was working with wheat and turf grass. So he did turf grass trials. And I talked with Dr. Kranz and decided if I wanted to do plant pathology, that's where I needed to be. But At that time, I told both of them that my objective in changing and doing this was to develop an emphasis in turf pathology at Mississippi State for our turf grass management students. And now it's golf and turf grass management, golf and sports. So I was able to do that, and they gave me the freedom to go, and Dr. Trevathan and I worked with Dr. Kranz and their golf course operations lab for one semester. We taught turf grass diseases. Mm-hmm. And we had a huge class. Stephen Miles was in it and several others, too many to, I can't remember all of them, but I think it was very successful. So that was kind of our test to see whether or not it would be something the students would want and could utilize that information. And then after that, we went ahead and created a 2-hour lab class, which was on Tuesday or Thursday and Friday afternoons. So only the dedicated students took that class.
Sure.
And we did that for several years until I got my position as a faculty member after I graduated. And then I developed it into a traditional course, meeting twice a week with a 3-hour lab. So Dr. Kranz and Trevathan were very much supportive in my vision and what I wanted to do. And, you know, without their support, it wouldn't have happened.
Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. So it was around 2003 when you became a faculty member, and that was when Dr. Mike Goatley moved from Mississippi State to Virginia Tech.
Yeah, 2004.
Okay.
January.
All right. So tell me, what's the best advice, speaking of mentors and learning and carving out your path, what's the best advice you've been given by someone in the field?
Well, early on, it was people that supported me in making the decision to work on a PhD. Mm-hmm. And to move forward, and without their support and my husband's support a lot to do that, because I just had a little baby, and so it was all happening at the same time. They gave me the confidence that I could do it.
Yeah.
And my husband gave me the time to put into it by taking care of our son and letting me study and do all that extracurricular work. So.
Yeah, it's great to have a support system at home when you're in the trenches of PhD work. I can't imagine.
For 6 years, I think it took.
Oh, man. Oh, I admire you. I don't understand how you guys make it through those years, and especially having small children and, you know, continuing to have a life outside of your work.
But, yeah.
So, you know, now that you have survived that phase and you're kind of you're reflecting back on a career, what would your advice be for someone at that starting point that you were at, beginning a career in, whether it's education or actually a turf professional job? What would you say to those folks?
Well, you have to find your passion and something that, you know, you love and are excited every day to wake up and go to work and persevere through it, because a lot of it is just perseverance and working towards your goals and not to give up. And but if you don't love what you do and aren't passionate about it, I don't think that person's going to be happy in their choices. So
definitely
find something that you love. And that's what I've told my grad students as well, is, you know, find something that excites you and that you're passionate about, because you're going to spend the rest of your career in that area. So that's what I would say.
That's great advice. So what do you like most about the work you do?
It's like solving a puzzle in pathology, whether it's turf or other plants. But I love the diagnostics, and that's what's really opened the door for me, is turf diagnostics and working with golf course superintendents in problem solving. And when you receive a sample that came from across the country, you've got a 4-inch cup cutter plug that was taken from maybe a 3,500 square foot green. So here's this little snapshot of what the superintendent thinks is the worst problematic area. And then it's my challenge to solve that problem. So it's kind of like, you know, CSI, you've got your host, which is the victim, and then the unsub is the pathogen that's killing it. And through that work, I've discovered and characterized many novel fungi associated with diseases. I've been able to characterize a new disease, ink spot, and it was a fungus that had never been described before. So, you know, it's fun to be able to name fungi and characterize them. And we're currently doing that with some of ectotrophic root infecting fungi that my former student and now professor at Rutgers, Philip Bynes, identified in his thesis research. And so we've characterized two of them, which means they're novel, so you have to identify them based on morphological and molecular characteristics. And it's nice to be able to expand that knowledge base in taxonomy, fungal taxonomy, and in turf grass diseases, and that community as a whole, to expand and, you know, bring forward new fungal species that are causing disease that have been overlooked in the past. Mm-hmm. And so that's the part of the job that I love. And then working with the superintendents after I come up with answers and talking to them and how to approach disease management. And so, yeah, that's the best part of it. And also teaching the students in my class, because so many of them have gone off to golf courses and they become the people that are sending me samples. Mm-hmm. So we still have, I still have a connection with a lot of former students from, you know, back in the day. So it's like, you know, kind of a family. The turf community is small, and that's, it's nice because you can get to know a lot of people and routinely see them or talk to them on the phone throughout the year. So, yeah.
Okay. I'm coming back to the CSI analogy. You're speaking my language. I need to know if there has ever been a crime or a mystery that you haven't solved in your analogy here. Have you ever been stumped?
Well, that first disease, it came in on a 328 putting green sample. And I thought the disease was dollar spot. And what we normally do is we will take infected tissue and we will plate it onto a nutrient medium and let the fungus grow out. So this was a Friday night. I was doing that. So I put some, cleaned up some tissue and put it on a nutrient medium. And I came back on Monday and I saw this fungus that was very black. And I was like, what in the world is this? And through a lot of studying that fungus, and that was when like molecular tools were just starting to be used. And I didn't have a molecular background, but some of my students had a little bit of background. And I knew we had to extract the DNA and use a barcode gene for fungi to get an idea of who it was. Well, that took about 6 years to successfully resolve that mystery. Mm-hmm. And right there, it's perseverance, because I could have easily just put it on the back shelf and moved on, but I kept coming back to it. And we kept getting more samples coming in and into our plant diagnostic lab with those characteristic foliar symptoms. So because of that, I was like, okay, there is something out here. But yeah, it took about, I started working on it in 2007, and we published the characterization of the fungus and disease in 2016.
Oh my goodness.
So
that is for sure.
You just don't give up.
Yeah, that's great. So aside from 6 year long projects, what is the greatest challenge of your job?
I don't think there really is a greatest challenge, because whatever's thrown at you, you just buckle down and do it. Initially, for me, it was doing presentations to a lot of people.
Yeah.
That was hard. You know, talking in front of 200 people. Those were challenges back in the day. But through teaching, I got used to communicating and talking about turf. So, you know, I got over that, but it's still challenging to put together talks that would pertain to that the audience could receive and get useful information out of. You know, when I was invited to do talks, to me, that was the challenge of making sure my talk provided information that the audience could use, and it was useful information. And so I guess that would be it.
That makes sense for sure. So what's the most significant advancement you've seen in turfgrass in your career?
You know, I lived through when bentgrass was first introduced into the South. Mm-hmm. And it was wonderful grass, but it was difficult in the summer. And then when they started to introduce in the early 90s, the ultra dwarfs, I saw the challenges that they presented in terms of management and thatch control, and how superintendents had to evolve and learn on the fly, basically, how to manage the grass, because it wasn't like the dwarfs, TIF dwarf and 328 in management. A lot of diseases came with those ultra dwarfs, which, you know, opened up some opportunities for me to study. And now they're using so many molecular methods to study and develop turf and develop new varieties of turf and phenotype through gene sequencing. It's along with the traditional plant breeding. I think it's just really interesting how the molecular biology is really taken a foothold in turfgrass science. It's a wonderful tool. And like back in the day, I started in tissue culture, and that was like, oh, cutting edge. And now we're, you know, sequencing the genes. So it's just been very interesting to see that evolution.
For sure.
I don't know if that answered the question or not.
Absolutely. Well, and applying that moving forward, what should we be looking for from the next generation turfgrass scientists? You know, a lot of those have been your students. You mentioned before, they're all a family and doing different work. What do you think we should look for from those guys?
I think they're just going to continue on that wave of new technologies now, you know, spectral imaging and using drones, I think will become a large part of how superintendents are going to get a better idea of what's going on the golf course from tee to green. And so utilizing those technologies, drones and multispectral imaging and the molecular based tools to advance turf grass and fungi. So, you know, getting into some of what is already started, I think will take off. I'd like to think maybe there'll be some more bent grasses coming into the South again. I kind of think maybe within the next 10 to 15 years, we might see some bent grass varieties coming in and maybe regrassing those ultra dwarfs worth of bent grass. That's just the cycle of the way our world works. And through advances with bent grasses and more heat tolerance and disease resistance, it might lend itself to a better grass than the old Pencross used to be that we started with in the 80s down south.
Definitely. So this is one of those awkward questions that you get asked when you're about to retire and you have to brag a little bit, but I think you've probably earned that privilege. What do you feel is your greatest career accomplishment looking back?
I think it's mentoring the grad students that came through my program and to see where they are today. And they're all in professional fields, several with PhDs, some still in turf and some in industry. And there, I think my greatest accomplishments was mentoring them.
That is definitely, that's a great legacy. So we're now seeing more women become interested in turf grass, whether it's practical hands-on management or research and in an academic role. And I think a lot of people probably think of you as a trailblazer in that area. What would you tell women who are entering the field that's largely been a male-dominated field over all these years?
I would just tell them to jump in and get going, you know. And I never had any problems being in kind of a male-dominated industry. Everybody's been extremely respectful, and I think it would be wide open and there should be no intimidation factors or, you know, hard work, and you'll be recognized and appreciated for those efforts. So I'd say go for it.
Definitely. I love that. So this podcast, of course, is for Mississippi Turfgrass members, although I'm sure that others far and wide will love to hear about your career and your background. But I want to talk for a minute about industry associations. And I know that you have very generously shared your time and expertise with multiple organizations like that. And I just want to speak to why is that important for you as a researcher? And how do you feel that contributes to the advancement of actual turf grass managers out in the field?
I kind of alluded to it before, to share that information on research. As a research professor, you do the research and you write up results. And it's really the extension people that extend that information. So sometimes I'm in my own little vacuum, and it's fun to be able to extend that information that has been developed in my lab or from other people's work in sharing that practical information to the turf managers, so then they can in turn utilize some of those tidbits of information and see if that can help them manage their turf so they can be as healthy as it can be. A healthy turf is a happy turf, and or a happy turf is a healthy turf. And so You know, that's why when I was invited to talk at conferences and stuff, I was very willing to do that and engage with the superintendents and turf managers. Looking out when you're talking, you see them nodding their head. They're like, oh, yeah, I know what she's talking about. And just that connection.
That's fantastic. So what will, upon your retirement here this summer, is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
What will you miss most about your work?
Probably, you know, coming into the lab and, you know, doing diagnostics. I mean, I could sit at the scope for hours and hours and look at turf and what's growing in that turf and the people, the students. You know, I'm going to miss all that.
All right. Okay. So let's talk about the fun part of retirement. What are your plans?
I'm not going to do anything.
That sounds lovely.
I'm just going to wake up and see what the day brings to me. But I love working in my yard and maintaining my grass, my lawn, and, you know, pruning and doing a lot of, you know, I call it yard work, but it's just maintaining, you know, that's the old horticulturalist in me. And maybe, you know, I was supposed to go on some trips that got canceled. So maybe in 2022, we can start going places again and, you know, do some traveling, international travel is one of my plans. And I have sisters that live in town. So, you know, we can hang out together and just visit family and friends.
That sounds lovely. We talked about this earlier before we were recording. I hear that you used to play golf and you may be considering picking that back up. True or false?
True. I decided last fall when I was riding around MSU golf course looking for diseases to bring the students out. I was like, man, I need to get my clubs out of the mini storage and start swinging them again and playing nine holes. I played a lot in grad school. And played a lot with my dad back in that time. And I think it would be fun to pick it up again.
Okay. Well, I suggested this and I really think you should follow up on it. Do you think you could parlay your golf course superintendent connections to get some golf course perks, maybe some lessons?
I don't know. Probably not, you know.
Okay.
Well, I'll talk with the superintendents when I go out there.
Yeah. I'm just going to put this out there. Maybe you're too nice to call those favors in after all your work, but any golf course superintendents listening, you roll out the red carpet.
Okay.
If I go
to one of their courses, I'll for sure contact them before I get out there.
Definitely.
Now, I would like to say, speaking of golf courses, that throughout my career, Brad Suggs and Bill Colorado, who used to be at Old Waverly, and Pat Snead at Mississippi State Golf Course, they opened up their courses to me to do research. And, you know, that was very, very special and nice to be able to be on a working course and do research. And so without those two golf courses, I couldn't have done a lot of what I did and a lot of the research that I was able to successfully do and had grad students working at those golf courses doing their master's thesis research. So I just wanted, you know, say thank you to them and for opening up their golf courses as a research laboratory to me. They were very generous in doing that.
It's a fantastic community with some really exceptional people for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
I covered every single one of my questions, which never happens. So thank you for playing along with all those. Is there anything else that we didn't cover that you want to make sure we add?
Not really.
Okay.
You know, But yeah, shout out to Old Waverly and MSU Golf Course. I think it's pretty important.
Yeah.
I'd like to also, you know, thank everybody that I've worked with in the turf teams, the people that came and went and are here today, and for the support of MTA. When I first started, I got some seed grant monies from them to kind of get my program jump started, and to the other associations that provided funding for my research, Louisiana, Mississippi Golf Courses, and the Alabama Turf Foundation. You know, they were very open and generous and supportive of my research and supporting grad students. So, you know, without those groups and associations, it would have been difficult to, you know, start a program and keep it going. And I just appreciate, you know, their willingness to work with me and support me.
Definitely. Well, I'm sure that all of those individuals and groups and organizations were delighted to be able to be a part of that. And on behalf of MTA and Alabama Turfgrass Association on all of those, I wish you a big congratulations on a well-deserved, well-earned retirement and a very exciting career.
Thank you so much. It's kind of crazy. It's over. Time flies.
You may just get your first 6 months to a year of retirement and shock that you actually made it there. Don't miss an episode of Mississippi Turfgrass. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've been listening to The Turf Zone. For more episodes of The Turf Zone, visit theturfzone.com and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app.